is a change in press conferences from March 19th to April 4th.
Here's State of the State message. I propose changes in the law that would reduce the flood of spending measures that flow down to my desk from the legislature at every session. Those proposals were in line with Proposition 1, the tax limitation plan of last year. Today, I'm happy to announce that Assemblyman Bill Bagley and Senator John Stull will soon introduce those proposals in the form of legislation. They are here. Good government demands fiscal restraint, and during these 7-plus years, I haven't hesitated to reduce appropriations or blue-pencil unnecessary spending items from the budget. Had this action not been taken, a tax increase would have been necessary almost every one of those 7 years, just to balance the budget. Fiscal responsibility should be a two-way street, in the governor's office and in the legislature. The state constitution requires the governor to submit a balanced budget, and if necessary, he's required to propose higher taxes to make sure the budget is balanced. I believe the same requirement should apply to the legislature. Accordingly, Assemblyman Bagley and Senator Stull will introduce a constitutional amendment imposing this restraint on the legislature. It provides that the budget bill passed by the legislature shall not propose expenditures in excess of available state resources. If it does, then the legislature would be required to pass a companion bill by June 15th of each year to provide the additional revenues to balance the budget. This amendment to the Constitution would have the effect of eliminating most of the unnecessary spending proposals that have contributed to the yearly increase in the cost of government and the constant drain on the taxpayers' resources. In addition, Senator and Assemblyman will introduce legislation that will require the following. One, neither house of the legislature shall approve a bill with an expenditure of $1 million or more unless it contains a new tax to pay for it, a corresponding reduction in the state budget, or a statement that it can be funded from existing revenues. Two, require every expenditure bill and amendment to contain a revenue synopsis for ensuing years with a legislative analyst. And three, require that any bill needing a tax increase contain a statement in bold-faced type saying that a tax increase will be needed to fund the proposal. And I would be happy to take any questions you might have here. It's going to be the authors, and I'm very appreciative of their authoring the bill.
Let me just say, mechanically, as soon as I leave this room, the bills, the three bills and the constitutional amendments, will be introduced this morning. So it's not a matter of going to. We are going to do it right now. The only other happy thought I wanted to express to you, Governor, and I mean this, I don't think this has been said in the last 7 years because you weren't leaving office. But in a generation of politicians, no governor other than you have left office without leaving a legacy of losses. And I mean that, sir. These bills, hopefully, will put the constraints into the law books to help future governors and legislatures carry on that tradition. And I thank you for your efforts.
Comment that bills will be introduced in the Senate today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both very much.
I've seen nothing to indicate that he isn't. Nor did the people, because they elected him by re-elected him by an overwhelming majority in the 1970 election.
Perception of the political consequences of the indictments, and does not ask for whether the man is guilty or innocent. What impact, in your own personal view, as an astute politician, do you think these indictments will have on the lieutenant governor's candidacy?
Well, I have no way of judging that. It's an unprecedented situation. I have no way. I think all of us have to be reminded of what I said yesterday. It's about the only statement I can make now under the circumstances, that an indictment is an accusation only, and there must be the presumption of innocence on anyone so indicted or accused, unless and until proven guilty beyond the shadow of a doubt.
Governor, beyond the presumption of innocence, though, there's a political question there. Whether
yes,
he's
and said, I have no way of judging that. I really don't.
Don't you have any feelings? You haven't chalked up the kind of votes that you have over the years and attracted the kind of support that you have without having some kind of political acumen. I'm just wondering what your personal feeling is about the impact on his candidacy and even on the Republican Party by these charges.
Well, again, there is no way to answer this. Your own news services and the television news last night made it very evident that the speaking engagement subsequent to the announcement of the indictments, there was no questioning the enthusiasm of the people present in his behalf. So I don't know how you're going to judge this. No. Unless he requested, no. Yes, I called him to express my sympathy for what had taken place. I think that what Mr. and Mrs. Hearst said last night was the absolutely correct thing to say, and I hope it will be repeated very many times. I think that, first of all, Patty Hearst, regardless of the statement made, is not in any way constrained by law in being able to move where she wants to if she is free, as has been, as was stated in that tape. And I think that Mr. and Mrs. Hearst are absolutely correct in saying that until she walks in the door and tells them personally that she's a member of the SLA, common sense dictates that you have to accept that she is still being held prisoner by the SLA. If she is not, there's no reason in the world why she cannot come and make this statement in person and walk back out the door as her parents said she could. I think the role of law enforcement is exactly what has been stated already by law enforcement authorities. As far as they're concerned, she's the victim of a kidnapping.
Is she walking the door, though, without being subject to perhaps prosecution for being part of an extortion plot?
The only thing I know is I've read a statement that by law enforcement that no, she's not wanted for anything. She was very obviously carried out her first plea on tape in her own voice, was asking to be rescued and saved. Now we're being asked to believe that she has made a statement of her own free will, that she no longer feels that way, and that she has decided to join those who kidnapped her. But as I say, until she says that in person, I think it would be folly to believe that that she made this of her own free will.
Your appointment yesterday of Pat Gaiman as director of the Human Affairs marked the first woman appointment you've made as a department head during the 7 years of your administration. Why'd you wait so long?
Well, it's just those male chauvinists that surround me. No, we've made a great many appointments, and there have been a great many women appointed to positions, and we forget sometimes that while in one area, such as department heads, it is just fallen that way, that ours is a commission form of government. And if you check on the very many commissions that have a very important place in California state government, we have made a great many appointments of women. And, have done our best to increase the number who are judges also in California. So we think that she is eminently qualified to do this, and this was a good appointment. As a matter of fact, my only concern was who we were going to get to take her place and what she's been doing.
Do you envision her as merely presiding over these various boards and commissions over there, or do you envision her as an active consumer advocate?
I view her as doing the job and the philosophy that should be done, and that is that the consumer agency there, or department, is set up to protect the consumer from those who would take unfair advantage of them, for those who would cheat. At the same time, I think that department has to recognize and help the people to understand that the overwhelming majority of people who Therefore, there will be not only the cheats, but there will be legitimate cases of error or mistake. And many of those are corrected frequently by the department. I recognize, in view of what took place in the recent strike, the concern, but the concern must be much longer range than that with San Francisco. It has a pervasive pollution problem. Now, we've already committed $560 million in state and federal funds to update the sewage treatment in that one area, and we expect to spend another $750 million. We've committed $2 billion already statewide to this problem across the state. And we need another $2 billion. And that's why I'll get in a plug for Proposition 2, why it was placed on the ballot, the Clean Water Bond Act. It'll be on the ballot in June. And this will be the most effective thing that we can do to take care of this problem. Now, the San Francisco Regional Board has initiated 25 court cases in connection with San Francisco Bay. They've won 11. The remaining are various stages of preparation and litigation. And we're currently reviewing, and have been for some time, all the waste discharges over there, setting tighter requirements, and that task will be finished by the end of this year. We did play a vital role in reopening the sewage treatment plants that were shut down. By law, there are obviously certain restrictions on what the state can do in invading local autonomy. But where this approach to health problems, we were monitoring the waters of the bay, bacteria count, and the possibility of a health menace. We then sent people over there during the strike to tell the governmental leaders in San Francisco that the state was going to quarantine every foot of beach in the area and around the bay. We also were seeking personnel. This is not easy. You can't just put anyone into a plant of that kind without running a very great risk of damaging the machinery and thus creating more of a pollution problem during the weeks and months of repair. We were scouting throughout the entire country with the help of EPA in Washington to find technicians who could go in and reopen that plant or those sewage plants. Now, let me give a little lecture here for just one added second. San Francisco has a problem that could cost billions and billions of dollars to totally alleviate this condition. It has, and I guess it's about the only city we know in California, that has single sewer pipes to handle both runoff water from the streets and rooftops and so forth, as well as sewage. And every time it rains more than a few tenths of an inch in San Francisco, you have raw sewage going into the bay because it is going accompanied by that water. The sewage disposal plants can't handle it. The total answer to the problem would be tearing up every street in San Francisco and adding another sewer pipe to handle just street runoff as separate from sewage. They right now are exploring the idea of some great underground cesspools that would temporarily hold this in time of rain, hold sewage, and then have it later be pumped through the plant. Whether these are going to be effective or not, I'm not an engineer, and they're still under study, I don't know. But it is a very difficult problem, and it's a problem that must be met, because I think we're all agreed that we cannot go on every time it rains. As someone said in San Francisco once, that every time it rains, even the droppings of the elephants in the zoo wind up in the bay.
Recent incident in the Department of Veterans Affairs involved the disclosure of details of individual loan files to the public by an employee or employees. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, yes, we're having it investigated, and have asked for an investigation of that. I don't know the results yet. I just have to say, philosophically, I am opposed. With government being more and more involved in more and more individuals' lives, and sometimes unnecessarily so, many times necessarily so with some of our social programs, I am very concerned, and I think most people are, that we take every precaution to ensure the confidentiality of records that government holds.
A law that would make it a misdemeanor for an employee in that department to make public details of veterans' files. Now, they have, of course, in addition to loan files, the medical and military records of veterans.
Yeah. Earl, I'll go beyond that. I'll say that I favor whatever action is necessary, not only in that department, but in others, to ensure this confidentiality.
Now, one other point, Trevor. Conversely, do you think that a veteran should have the right to review his own personal file, loan file in that department?
Well, I certainly would think so, yes.
Well, that's not the case now.
Well, these are things that then we'll see if we can get corrected.
2 years ago, an appointee of yours was involved in a situation in Honolulu. You wasted no time asking for his resignation, and yet he was only accused in that situation also. Now, Lieutenant Governor Reinecke is indicted, and he's presumed innocent until proven guilty, and yet there seems to be a lack of consistency.
No, I don't think there is a lack of consistency. In one case, we're talking about an appointee of mine, and we're talking about a situation that, as I explained at the time, that there was bad judgment involved, regardless of guilt or innocence. Bad judgment in his even being there under the circumstances that he was there, and that in those cases and where our appointments are concerned, I think we have to have, we can't even afford the appearance of wrongdoing. But in this other case, you are talking about a man who was elected as a constitutional officer. He's not an appointee of anyone. Therefore, he makes any determination that is made about his tenure of office.
And I realize that he's a separate elected officer, but isn't the point the same for best serving the public interest on a question like this?
Well, no, I don't think so, because the other one involved a man in which the question concerned his judgment with regard to the task that he was presently performing. It wasn't as if he had been arrested for speeding or drunk driving or something of the kind, and therefore you had a case outside the job that he was performing. But his misjudgment involved the work that he was doing in the area of conflict of interest.
Because to help California and do things that were right for the state in his role as lieutenant governor to get that convention in San Diego.
That's right. He was in charge of seeing if we could not bring the convention to California.
Do you have the appearance of misconduct here in the performance of his job? With Mr. Mullen?
No, I don't think so.
Well, did he ever tell you about his conversations with Mr. Mitchell?
No.
Did you ever discuss?
What?
Did you ever discuss with him the probability of the $100,000 ITC underwriting with his hotels in San Diego for the convention?
When the Sheraton Hotel made that proposal, which was not an offer of a contribution, it was an offer to underwrite that amount if they couldn't raise it, if the citizens' bipartisan committee that was trying to get the convention to San Diego, and which was willing to raise $1.5 million, that was more than any city in the United States had proposed raising to lure a convention there. At that time, very frankly, when the news broke that the Sheraton Hotels, who had a new hotel opening and were going to coincide their opening with the convention, were willing to do this, I very frankly, and I happen to know that this is true of him and others, didn't even know it was a subsidiary of any other group. I just all my life have known the name Sheraton Hotels and just assumed it was a hotel doing this. As a matter of fact, the same hotel chain spent $1 million on their own for their opening of a hotel in Honolulu. And subsequent to this time, as I understand it, they did not come forward with $400,000, but long before there was any involvement or news of any kind, it's my understanding that the Republican National Committee, which was the one who would make this decision, where the convention would be. They rejected that contribution or that offer of underwriting as being too out of line from one contributor.
I didn't quite answer the question. The question is, did you share communications with him regarding his discussions about the whole thing?
No.
You never talked to him about it?
No. Since then, he's talked and he's expressed to me his belief in his innocence, as he has stated publicly the same thing.
Lieutenant Governor will be on trial, which he said he wants, during late spring, early summer, fall month. Is that going to preclude you from leaving the state because he will be on trial to do whatever political things or governmental things you might undertake?
No, because under the law, if he is not here in the state, then the line of succession falls to the President Pro Tem of the Senate, who has on a number of occasions taken on that assignment and done very well. Well, now, I can't comment on things of that kind. The idea of a defendant wanting a change of venue, that goes with what is best for his own defense or what he feels. And again, with this now before the law, I think I've reached the limit of what I can comment on this case.
Your reaction to the Assembly Revenue and Taxation Committee investigating President Nixon's question of whether he owes state taxes or not?
Well, if the legislative committee is legitimately seeking an answer to this, I'm certainly they're entitled to any information that they want to ask for. The situation, however, has been misstated, I think, by the Speaker of the Assembly, that nothing is being done. Now, the normal process is that Tax Franchise Board asks Martin Huff whether he is pursuing this matter whenever a question is raised about someone's taxes. And he is pursuing the matter and said that he was going forward with a review of this case. Now, I think this should also bring up the very fact of what this situation is and why it came before the Tax Franchise Board in the first place. It is not unique. Here in California, on the basis of rulings handed down by the Board of Equalization, some time ago, the custom was established that when an individual with residence in California maintained that residence for voting purposes, but his position, his duty, or his work required him to be absent from the state on a more or less permanent basis for at least 3 years, that he then was not a resident for tax purposes. And that is applied to other individuals. And this is the basis for the non-payment of state income taxes by the president. And incidentally, I think the Speaker of the Assembly might be interested to know that the Board of Equalization for some time has been predominantly Democratic. So you could hardly inject partisanship into those rulings.
Why not? And what's being done about it?
No, it is my understanding that air conditioning being carried on and is going forward at the Pacific Hospital. Yes. And the construction is going forward.
It was disclosed yesterday that the contract has not even been let yet for that project, even though the money has been in the budget for almost a year now. Is your office going to intervene and attempt to expedite the situation?
I'd like to find out why it hasn't been let. Yeah. The question has been asked. I intend to be neutral in all Republican contested primaries.
You know, the Senate Rules Committee has held up the confirmation of Dr. Stubblebine, Director of the Office of Aging. Are you going to pursue that at all?
Yes, I hope that this is not just political fun and games going on up there in the part of the Senate Rules Committee. We asked Dr. Stubblebine to take on this assignment, believing in his expertise and that he could, the organization going on in that department, make a great contribution. And this is the Dr. Stubblebine, who has already been approved by the same rules committee previously for director of the Department of Health.
He qualifies for this particular job.
Well, we think he is. As I say, I'm very concerned that there are some games being played politically up there by the Rules Committee, and I intend to find out from the President Pro Tem if that is so. I've spoken to him once already on rumors that were coming down that such games were going to be played, and he gave me his pledge that he would not permit such a thing.
I think two more counties were taken off the gas plan yesterday, yeah. I think. What does that say about the availability of gas in California now?
Well, it's exactly, the availability is exactly what we've stated. And we reluctantly, as you know, made that emergency provision available to counties to halt what we said was panic buying and unjustified panic buying. Now, the counties, in those particular counties, have evidently believed now that that panic buying is over and that people have realized the availability of gasoline, the amount that we have. And I hope they haven't been precipitate, but I'm delighted if this is justified and look forward to removing more. We, as you know, regretted having to follow such a plan in the first place. We said that it was unnecessary if people would simply not be panicked. And so the counties are making that decision.
There's no more gas, but people are just stopped panic buying.
That's right.
I believe there's two positions open on the District Court of Appeal at the present time. Do you have any indication on when you'll fill those positions?
No, we are reviewing candidates right now, and hopefully make a decision as soon as possible.
Back to Dr. Stubblebine, what was the price that was asked at the cost of approving them? Was he guessing that there was a quid pro quo offered?
Oh, no. No, just... there were rumors that had come downstairs that because this was my last year, that there might be difficulty in getting any appointments to anything approved. Well, this is the only area in which I've had that concern.
Desk is interested, since you were man of the year at the Washington Touchdown Club. Do you think too much free enterprise is ruining the National Football League?